and took her first long look. She felt herself falling again, this time faster. From her son's head rose a brief tremor of hair, and planted in the center of his face was a fine razor of a nose, Chaco's nose, rendered by some miracle in sweet picayune perfection.
You're listening to Intersections Radio, the podcast where we geek out on all things intersectionality. I'm your host, Sarika Mehta. Welcome, and thanks for tuning in. Today, my guest is Shanti Sekaran, author of the novel Lucky Boy, about adoption, immigration, and motherhood in Berkeley, California. Two mothers' paths cross unexpectedly due to their love for this boy, Ignacio, the lucky boy. One mother is documented and one is not, and the immigration system has a heart-wrenching impact on the lives of both families. This outstanding story follows their lives as they each parent this child and fight for him to the end. Shanti was born and raised in California, and she is a creative writing teacher at California College of the Arts. Lucky Boy is her second novel. We're here at Portland's Wordstock Literary Festival. This is Intersections Radio. Shanti Sekaran, welcome to Intersections Radio.
Hello, thanks for having me here.
Let's talk about the two mothers in the story, Soli and Kavya. Tell us about them.
Okay, so Soli is a young woman from Mexico, from the Oaxaca region of Mexico. And when we meet her, she's planning to come to California, and she doesn't have papers. So we as readers end up following her across the border. She ends up in Berkeley. I won't give away anything about her journey, but she ends up in Berkeley, California. And she finds out shortly after that she's pregnant. And so we also meet Kavya. Kavya is Indian American. She grew up in America. She went to Berkeley. She's married to this guy named Rishi. And Kavya and Rishi are sort of your classic Berkeley couple. You know, they go to the farmer's market a lot. They get head massages. They drink kombucha, that sort of thing. Yeah, and they have a pretty beautiful life, but they can't have a kid, and that's their central struggle. So the two storylines end up converging around the fate of Soli's baby.
Exactly, and this is such an intense tale because these are two women of color who are mothers to the same child, and the way they fight for him to the end. From what I understand, the inspiration for the story was the news headline on a woman named Encarnacion Bail Romero, a Guatemalan woman whose child was adopted away from her. So tell us a little bit about that story and how this inspired yours.
Yeah, so Encarnacion Bail is a Guatemalan woman, and she was put into a detention center after a factory raid. She was in the Midwest, I believe in Missouri, and when she was in detention, her young son, I think he was about 6 months old to a year, around there, was taken from her and first put with relatives, but then through a series of sort of private arrangements ended up with this American couple who decided they were going to adopt him. And so when I heard about her through the news, she was trying to get her child back. She was fighting for custody.
In this kind of case, you know, it's like there's no bad guy. There's no clear bad guy, and there's no clear good guy, because everyone is fighting really hard, and it kind of makes us think what we would do for our own children in this circumstance.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to understand. So this book is not just based on Encarnacion's story. It's based on a lot of research. There are a lot of families going through similar situations. But when I heard about this woman in particular, I wanted to understand, for one thing, what was happening on the other side of that equation, what the adoptive parents were thinking, what they were telling themselves, because it felt very natural to me that if you're the biological mother of a child and you're willing and able, then you get to keep the child. So I wanted to really understand, you know, what both sides were feeling in this.
Absolutely. I was reading this as, you know, we're both mothers, mm-hmm. and I'm reading this as a new mother, and my son is close to the age of Ignacio in the story. Yeah. How was it for you as a woman of color who is a mother to write these two sides where it is painful at points and it is joy? I mean, to write something that, you know, can reach us in such an impactful way. What was it like to that process?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as a woman of color, I chose my protagonists to be two women of color. I didn't make that choice consciously as like a political, this is what I'm going to do, that I'm going to be representative in this way. I really knew that Soli was going to be Latina. That's just how she spoke to me. That's how she came to me. And Kavya, I just made Kavya Indian because I make most of my characters Indian, unless there is a clear reason to make them not Indian. So it was just sort of my natural impulse to create two women of color. But it ended up being, I think, an important theme of the book because it sort of illustrates how people interact now in California, what the face of California looks like now. You know, it's not black and white. It's not a binary anymore. It's much, it has been much more diverse for a long time than we've given it credit for. So I chose these two women and writing their stories, you know, it's kind of a dance when you're a writer. It's kind of a dance between feeling very deeply for them, but also stepping back and being very technical and surgical and asking yourself, am I telling this the right way? Am I using the right words? Is this going to affect the reader in the right way?
Actually, that brings up one of my other questions. Writing a character who's Indian American, it's not like we can just paint a broad brush and we can do that just because we happen to be Indian American, but it might come easier. When you're writing a character like Soli, who comes from Oaxaca and has this pretty treacherous journey throughout the book. I mean, you have to do it carefully for one thing. I know that. Where I'm coming from is just seeing other writers who are white trying to write from the perspective of characters of color and how that doesn't always work out properly or how, it, you know, there's a misrepresentation. So how did you feel about writing the character of Soli?
Yeah, so writing Soli was a pretty daunting undertaking. I was writing about someone who was Mexican, which I'm not, and undocumented, which I'm not. So like you said, I knew I had to do it really carefully. I started with some research, and, you know, one thing that I had to do for myself was accept my limitations. I was going to have to accept that there are things that I could never know about Soli's experience. There were limitations on me because I'm not Latina. So I would have to just do my best, really. And so I think it was a combination of doing tons and tons of research into people like Soli and what their experiences were, what their personal, like reading their personal testimonies and learning about policy. And then finding the point at which I personally can connect to Soli. And that was through motherhood. That was through, you know, knowledge of what it is to be a young woman, to be in love, to want to make something great of your life, to have that impulse that drives you forward. So that's what I did.
Tell us more about the research, because there was the story of Encarnacion, which you talked about earlier. But then, like you said, what you did to research into writing the character of Soli, but not just Soli, like Kavya and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I started out, you know, learning, first of all, how people get across the border, what that journey looks like, what the dangers are, what the methods of transport are. I learned a lot about immigration policy. I spoke to every immigration lawyer or policy person who would talk to me, really. I found some great reports about families in detention and specifically how parents lose their children through the detention process. And on the other side of it, I had to research adoption and foster care and the technicalities of that, but also the emotions of it. You know, a lot of people spoke to me about their own experiences and fertility struggles. I know, unfortunately, plenty of people who've been through those. And so I was really just trying to plug in emotionally to what I was learning factually.
All of those issues come up in this story, all of those intense issues. When you were doing this research, were there any stories that came up that were just unforgettable or still stick in your mind?
Yeah, you know, there are stories from sort of Kavya's side of the equation. There are stories of foster parents who took in children, fell in love with them, and had to give them back or thought that they were going to adopt a child and then found out that they couldn't have that child. And I learned a lot about the precautions that you take as a foster parent. when you know you're taking in a child that is not biologically yours, and you try to put up these emotional blockades, but you're dealing with a child, you know, and it's so hard to maintain a distance when you're caring for them every day.
That made me think of, I mean, the whole point of fostering a child is for them to have stability and love and care. And how do you do that when you have to put up these emotional blocks? Right. How do you do that with emotional blocks, knowing that this may or may not become a forever situation?
Right. And it reminds me a little of the Kinder transport in World War II, you know, the transport of young Jewish children out of the countries that were in danger to places like the UK. And I sort of learned about that just out of personal interest. And I remember learning about families who were, according to the children that were sent there, who were just like very distant. Like sometimes parents would just be like, okay, like we're going to feed you and keep you safe. And that's, you know, there was very little emotional connection. And I remember at first being very judgmental about that. You know, how can a parent do that? But now I sort of respect that distance that people force on themselves. I don't know if I could do it myself, but I understand that there has to be often a sort of safety net for parents as well.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know why I didn't think about that before even reading the book. Well, it brings up another one of my questions. The issue of adoption and adopting outside of your race. And typically that is discussed from the lens of white parents adopting outside of their race. Yeah. We never talk about people of color adopting outside of their race. I mean, it is pretty rare when that comes up. And in this situation, we have Indian American parents who are adopting a little Latino boy. Mm-hmm. Talk about that dynamic.
Yeah. So, you know, Kavya, I wrote this whole history of Kavya that didn't end up in the book, but she was very much an activist in college. She was very into like solidarity with other people of color. So it came naturally to her to love and want to take care of this little boy who is Latino. And the only sort of obstacle that she comes up against within her own family is from her mother, who has a problem with adoption in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, she comes from a very traditional mindset that says, our children come from us. They come biologically from us. We know what's in their genes. We know their family history. So that was her mother's problem with adoption. It wasn't the fact that Ignacio was Latino. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just like put these two together. And I tried not to think too much about the race element of having an Indian American adopting a Latino. Part of that was just that I didn't know, you know, it doesn't happen very much.
Right.
So it's just, as far as I know, it's in my book. It probably happens out in the world. And it played out how it played out for my characters.
It doesn't happen much, at least in our community, because of exactly what you said, mm-hmm. you know, with Kavya's mother. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty accurate representation of how people think about family, that it's like as close as we can get to our genetic makeup. You know, it's the community, it's the caste, it's the region, any degree outside of that is, well, brings up some drama. So if we're talking about adoption, it's like, I've heard people, you know, just talking about it like, this isn't their real child, that kind of language, unfortunately. I'm hoping it's changing.
You know, I think in most communities, but I know in the South Asian community, a lot of progress happens through seeing other people doing
right.
certain things and seeing that it's okay, seeing that it's accepted by the community. I think it started that way with my experience of interracial marriage, where, you know, the first kids of my generation to marry outside of the race, it was really sort of a big deal, and the parents had a kind of a problem with it. But then by the time it came round to my brothers, by the time it came round to me, you know, we had seen other families do this, friends of ours, and it was accepted and it was fine and it was great. And so it's that sort of community acceptance that I think leads to progress. We sort of look to each other to see what's okay.
Yeah. So this story, I think it's in the genre of literary fiction. From what I have heard, the ending of the story changed a few times, and it's almost a different genre from the rest of the book. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts on this, and what was the process to coming to the ending without telling the ending?
Okay. Yeah, so the ending, it tends to move faster than the rest of the book. Yeah. You know, the first part of the book was a lot of character building, and it just moves slowly. And the ending, I wanted it to be suspenseful, and it did change. It sort of like did a 180 reverse. It did a full reverse, basically, with the ending from one draft to another. And I had realized that my old ending was not delivering the punch that the book needed. You know, there had been a lot of buildup, and then it kind of just like went quiet at the end. And so the new ending, I think, packs a lot more drama. It's a little nuts. I felt a little crazy writing it. But I think it works.
It is a little, wow.
Yeah. It makes sense to me for my characters. Yeah. You know, it makes sense within the context of who my characters are and what they've been through. And that was the most important thing. And I think it delivers on what has been promised in the book.
How did you feel? Well, if the ending changed a few times, how did you feel about, I mean, the characters come to life? There are winners and losers, so to speak. And how did you feel about that? Because we get so attached to all the characters. And like I said, there are no bad guys and there are no good guys. Everybody is flawed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how did you feel about how this plays out for who ends up, so to speak, in a very simplistic manner, becoming the winner and who becomes the loser?
Right. Well, I knew from the beginning that I'd have to choose. You know, I couldn't make one of those Hollywood endings where everyone's happy.
Right.
So I knew that this would be the situation. And the way that it plays out, you know, the people who sort of didn't get what they wanted, I still think about them. It's like there are these, it's like that character is a friend who had to go through something really hard, and I still think about that character. So it stayed with me. When I was writing it, I was very cold and technical and like, this is what's happening, and, you know, I made it happen. But now that I reflect back on it, I feel it like a reader might.
I mean, especially you've invested a lot of time. How long did this book take to write, publish?
From the conception of the idea to the final edits with my publishing house, it took about 6 years.
You've invested time and, you know, a lot of emotional energies. But at the same time, even if the ending had gone in a different direction, that means that somebody else is so either way, we are heartbroken and also at the same time relieved.
I've had people write to me and basically they're mad at me for what I did, you know, to various people at the end. But I had to do something to someone. So I'm like, well, sorry. I mean, it would have been the other way, and maybe that would have made you happy, but I did what I thought was right.
And it kind of speaks to a bigger issue. You know, this is a work of fiction, mm-hmm. but it is based on all of this research of real life events. Mm-hmm. So if we're feeling this way about fictional characters, what does that say about people who are going through these experiences in real life? I don't know if this is a spoiler, but Soli ends up in detention, and that is a completely horrifying section of the book as well, that experience.
Yeah, you know, I think that readers, they look to fiction to understand things that are happening in the real world, and it's not that far from what's happening in the real world. I mean, there are elements, especially towards the end, where we really get into fiction world. Yeah. You know, things happen that's what fiction is for that extra sort of dynamite that you get to put into a story. But we have always culturally related to real issues through fiction, through television, through film, you know, so this is a continuation of that.
So speaking of which, how have the communities that might be reading this who feel they're themselves represented, how have they responded?
I was a little wary of that because I'm writing about a young Mexican woman. You know, I was a little worried about how the Latinx community would respond because it's not my story and I'm telling it. It's been very warm. It's been a good, warm reception. I've had, you know, Latino groups at Google and Latino USA interview me, and just people out in the world who have somehow found my book and written to me and said, I'm glad that you wrote this. I'm glad that someone from outside our community is caring enough to represent us and tell our story. So it's been pretty warm in that sense. And I've heard from people who have been adopted themselves, and you know, they like that I don't glorify the adoption process. I don't turn adoptive parents into saints. You know, they're humans. Rishi and Kavi are very human. So it's, I think it's been generally positive. And if it hasn't, they just haven't told me.
I think what you did is not easy, writing the perspective of somebody that you don't have any experience with. That's not easy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's taken for granted a lot. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
I just went to Mexico to promote it. Wow. I just got back two days ago. Well, I just got back a couple days ago, and yeah, I went to the Oaxaca Book Fair, and this book takes place in Oaxaca, and I had spent 2 weeks in that region researching the book, so it meant a lot to me to go back. And my position in Mexico right now is that my Spanish edition has just come out. No one really knows who I am. You know, this was my chance to sort of wave to the audience and be like, this is who I am, this is my book, this is what it's about. So it was a very introductory trip. But I found that the Mexican media, I did a lot of interviews, and they asked completely different questions from the American media, of course, because they're looking at it from the Mexican perspective. And we talked a lot about motherhood and what, you know, what this means for immigration, what my book means for immigration as a whole. So it was a great experience going there and sort of bringing my book home in a way.
Wow.
I didn't realize you had a Mexico component of your tour. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you want to read a part of your
sure.
book, if you have a favorite part or on something we've talked about?
I'll read a few paragraphs that I don't normally get to read. This is from just the moments after Ignacio is born, the few days after he's born. And a lot of this actually came from my own journals after my own son, my first son, was born. You know, it's such a new experience when you have your first child. It kind of like blows your mind. And I found myself writing down just every detail and coming up with all these like details that I was noticing about being a mother and having a child. So here we go. He was smallest at night, when shadows lapped at his edges. In the dark, he was magically small, a miracle, a sprite. It was easy in the hours before dawn to think Ignacio might die, only because it seemed impossible that such a creature could live a whole week, and then two, then three, and four. It was impossible to think that 4 weeks could grow into a lifetime. Love wasn't a word that meant anything to Soli, not when she looked at her boy. Love was a television word. Soli held her sleeping son, his fists balled and eyes shut tight, clinging to a dream. What she felt for him was epiphany. She had awakened, sprouted a new layer of skin, pink and raw and wholly vulnerable. For the first time since arriving in America, she was well and truly scared. And so she named him Ignacio, for the patron of retreats. At times, the fear consumed her. Fear that Ignacio would stop, simply stop. That each breath, the revelation that it was, could surely not lead to another.
That was my guest, Shanti Sekaran, author of the novel Lucky Boy. Shanti Sekaran, thank you so much for joining me on Intersections Radio.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To listen to the podcast of this interview, check out intersectionsradio.wordpress.com. Visit the same website for previous episodes of this podcast. And join the Facebook community at facebook.com/intersectionsradio. You're listening to Intersections Radio. I'm Sari Gamata. Thanks for listening.